said, for many years, it was thought that bacteria only live to produce more bacteria, as Francois Jacob said in 1973. But starting... Exactly. That's the law of life, right? So, but then around 1960, unexpected social qualities were found in bacteria. It was found that bacteria produce signals that and that they can discuss problems with each other. That's what I want to talk about. Now, I'm going to talk about that in the experimental context. I'm going to talk about it in the context of the evolution of quorum sensing in bacteria. And the story can begin with this beautiful animal, bobtail squid. You see its tentacles down there. This squid has developed a remarkable symbiosis with Vibrio bacteria. The bacteria produce light. Here are the bacteria in these two light organs. And the animal feeds those bacteria. The bacteria then produce light. And that light is used by the squid for a remarkable stealth technology. So the squid swims at night, and so in rather shallow waters off Hawaii, for example. And as it swims, moonlight and starlight shine down, and of course it casts a shadow on the bottom, where the predators of the squid live. And those predators then, seeing the squid's shadow, can attack it. However, this Euprymna squid has developed symbiosis in which it controls the light produced by the bacteria in its light organ, and it has not only the light generating cells, the bacteria, but it even has a lens and an aperture so that it exactly erases its shadow on the floor of the sea. And so, which is, has evidently been of great benefit to the survival of these squid. Now, that benefit, so what is the benefit to the bacteria for this symbiosis? The reproduction, what Jacob said. The squid feeds the bacteria so well that they grow up to a density of about 10 to the 11th cells per cubic centimeter, an extremely high density. And also then that results in the reproduction, very great reproduction of the bacteria. Well, I have a little bit more to say about that in a moment. So I would like then to start with the problem of how these bacteria, Vibrio fischeri they're called, produce light. Very expensive process. This part shows us that the light production is so expensive that actually the resources are exhausted after a night's period of producing light. So what the animal does in the evening is to squirt out of its light organs 90% of the cells inside. And then the bacteria reproduce in the light organ and grow back up to 10 to the 11th so that they're ready for another nighttime of light production. So there you can see these animals swimming along the bottom, close to the bottom.
Sorry, what's that picture on the bottom? What's the scale?
What's the scale? So this, I believe, is about 10 centimeters. Mm-hmm. That animals actually, when they're hatched, they're very small. They're only a couple of centimeters, and then they grow larger.
What's actually being shown in the lower pictures? The yellow and the black stuff?
So those are the animals during the day. They're resting down in the mud at the bottom of the...
So that's one squid in some sand.
Yeah, right. So in that squid, the bacteria are growing back up. It's discharged, fleshed out, and now the bacteria that are remaining are reproducing. Yes.
So would there be a fitness defect if the bacteria if the squids continue to glow during the day?
Why don't they continue to glow during
the day? Would they be more likely to be eaten if they were glowing during the day?
I don't know the answer to that, actually. But that would be very expensive. The light, let's see. Let me really answer that question in a minute or so. When I talk about the end, there it is right there. Light is produced by oxidation of a very expensive material, flavin mononucleotide, which is an electron carrier. It takes energy to generate that. Then that's oxidized. Then an fatty aldehyde is oxidized with molecular oxygen with electrons coming from the FmnH2. And so the aldehyde is oxidized to a carboxylic acid, and light is emitted. The reaction is catalyzed by a specific enzyme called a luciferase, light producing. Now the bacteria that are of which there are perhaps 10 to the third or so per cubic centimeter of seawater in these coastal waters do not produce light. Bacteria are not producing light. They only produce light when they are in the light organ of the squid. So the question is, why is that? The difference is that in the light organ, the bacteria are at very high cell density. I mentioned 10 to the 11th per milliliter. The light production is cell density dependent. And actually, these data show us how the amount of light produced per cell, specific luminescence, actually rises as a, so this is a laboratory experiment and test tube, as the cells grow to higher and higher densities. The light production increases about 100-fold. That phenomenon, why is there more light with higher cell density? Well, it was found that the reason is something released by the bacteria into the medium. So if conditioned medium, that is the culture medium that bacteria have grown in, is used and put with bacteria at low cell density, then the light emission can be raised. In other words, there's some kind of a density signal that's released into the medium.
Is this from the host or from the bacteria itself?
It's from the bacteria, because this experiment is with no host. So we're doing in culture what ordinarily happens in a host.
So what does the host do then?
The host supplies the bacteria with all of the nutrients they need to grow and oxygen.
That's a little dip.
Pardon me?
The dip to the left.
I don't know. So from the conditioned medium, material was purified using light production as a bioassay, and a substance indeed was isolated. It's called AI for autoinducer. And you can see that the purified autoinducer has the same effect that the conditioned medium had. So what is autoinducer? It is a fatty acylated amino acid. The amino acid is homoserine lactone, so it's not one of the 20 normal amino acids you find in proteins, but homoserine can be made biosynthetically by most cells. And so it is here, the homoserine has reacted with its own OH group to form a lactone. So this is called, well, you can see it, N3-oxohexanoyl. So this is a 6-carbon fatty acid homoserine lactone. So that's the autoinducer, and it's a hydrophobic substance. I mean, this is a fatty acid, and although serine ordinarily is water soluble, you can see that by forming the lactone, it's lost a lot of its polar character. So that the entire structure is rather non-polar. Okay, so I guess I've already mentioned this, that it requires a lot of energy to make light, because you have to keep FMN H2 reduced, and making this fatty acid is also expensive, made in the same way that we make our fatty acids, by linking together 2 carbon units. Now, autoinducer experiment shows is that cells, these vibrio, are capable of two different states. One in which they are at low density and they are not producing light. They're not spending the energy to make light. On the other hand, when they are at high density in the light organ, they do produce light. And what then the autoinducer does is to allow the cells to be clearly in one or the other of these states. And so how do cells switch from one state to another? Well, the autoinducer, hydrophobic, it can diffuse through the membranes of the cell, goes into the cytoplasm. It binds, the autoinducer binds to a protein called LuxR. LuxR then, with the autoinducer bound, binds to a DNA sequence called the LuxBox. And here's the LuxBox down here, the sequence. LuxR is a transcriptional regulator. It activates transcription in both directions from here. And so it transcription then occurs for the synthase of the autoinducer, the homoserine lactone. Also transcription of the genes that encode synthesis of the aldehyde, the substance going to be oxidized, and genes that encode the enzyme that catalyzes it, oxidation, the luciferase. So light is produced. So this then is a positive feedback, and that's why the light builds up to high intensity as the autoinducer induces transcription of more autoinducer and of the enzymes needed to produce light. A nice positive thing that throws it into the high light producing state.
Quick question?
Yes.
So how's it turned off? Are you going to talk about that?
How's it turned off?
Yeah.
It's turned off when there is not enough autoinducer. So what it does, it goes to a maximum inside the light organ, and then when those bacteria are ejected from the light organ, now the autoinducer level in the C is very low,
so
light goes off.
So is the autoinducer in the cell being degraded constantly?
No, it's being used. Just binding to the regulator.
So when the levels are low outside the cell, it just diffuses out, and then that allows.
Right.
So it doesn't.
Well, we're talking now about the cells that have come out of the light organ.
So they're not
at high density. They're not in the presence of enough autoinducer to jack the light production up.
Right, but they're already in this on state where they're making autoinducer and have to switch on in the cell. So I guess I was asking.
All right, but here's this one cell. It's producing, it's in the on state, it's producing autoinducer, goes out of the cell and
so
diluted.
It's just diffusing away.
Yeah, it's a huge. Right, it's got a huge sink there. So the cells go dim. Yes?
We need light for, where does that energy come to produce the light?
Pardon me?
We need to produce the energy, we have to invest the light, right? So we have to invest the energy to produce the light.
Yes.
So where is that bacteria? What is the source of that?
The source of that energy is glycolysis in the TCA cycle. Same place that ATP, fundamentally ATP. Yeah. Now, once this the auto inducer of Vibrio fischeri was found, soon thereafter, a number of other autoinducers were found in other bacteria. And I think probably at this time some 30 different autoinducers have been found. And they all follow this same kind of structural pattern of fatty acyl chain that sometimes has a carbonyl, sometimes a hydroxyl group, different lengths, always attached to homoserine lactone. So they all follow the same pattern. They produce very, very hydrophobic autoinducer. Yes, they all have an effect activating a transcription factor so this is happening in Serratia, Pseudomonas aeruginosa, Aeromonas, other Vibrio, and so forth. And in those cases, for example, in Pseudomonas, Pseudomonas is not producing light. Pseudomonas Pseudomonas aeruginosa can be a pathogen, cystic fibrotic lung. You have the Pseudomonas growing kind of a biofilm in the lung, and its virulence actually is controlled by its autoinducer. You have this regulatory circuit that can drive many different processes. In Vibrio fischeri, it drives light production.
Is the pigment related to the pathogenesis?
Is the what?
The pigment of the bacteria.
Of serratia?
Yes, yes.
I don't know actually whether I don't know.
Or is it pigment control also by that factor?
Well, so actually a very wide in Erwinia, I think this is a plant pathogen. I think actually various other kinds of compounds, toxic compounds, are produced. So we have basically in the quorum sensing controlled, we have a regulatory pathway that is a module that can be used to drive many different processes. Very kind of a very general thing. I already mentioned that the autoinducers are lipid soluble, so they can just diffuse right through the membrane and into cells. But as you can see, that's not a very good way, not a very fancy, high-tech way of detecting a signal. And that fact was not lost on the bacteria. So we have another Vibrio called Vibrio harveyi. I've been talking so far about Vibrio fischeri, two different species. The Vibrio harveyi also shows us quorum sensing luminescence. But parvii doesn't inhabit the light organs of any squid or fish, any animal. Rather, it forms biofilms. It lives free in the sea. It's not a symbiote. Now, Vibrio harveyi uses for its autoinducer a 4-carbon homoserine lactone, whereas Fischeri uses a 6-carbon homoserine lactone. The fatty acid has 6 carbons.
Do you know what is doing with the line?
Pardon me?
Oh, what is the line doing good in the non-symbiotic bacterium?
I don't know the answer to that, actually. Approximately, yeah. So it's probably in some way referring to the high density situation when the bacteria are making a biofilm on some kind of floating something in the sea. I don't know, that would be my guess. Now, the importance for us here is the fact that the C4 and the C6 homoserine lactones don't cross-react. That is, each species is specific for its own autoinducer. If you give the wrong autoinducer, you don't get light. Now, the Vibrio harveyi accomplishes this with a different kind of a system than the Vibrio fischeri does. So we have a different regulatory module for Vibrio harveyi. And it's kind of the next more complicated regulation of light production. It's by means of a 2-component system. So the autoinducer binds. It doesn't diffuse into the cell, but it binds to a receptor on the inner membrane of the bacteria. And that receptor is a sensor histidine protein kinase. So here, the autoinducer binds to the sensor domain. That causes the protein kinase to transfer a phosphate from ATP to a histidine, and then that's the autophosphorylation, and then there is the transphosphorylation. This phosphate is transferred to an aspartate in what's called the response regulator. So it's a separate protein that for which this histidine protein kinase receptor phosphorylates. And so this is a cytoplasmic protein. The general class of proteins are called response regulators because once the aspartate is phosphorylated, then this can be a transcription factor, an active transcription factor, bind through its output domain to a particular sequence in DNA, and you get transcriptional activation. So here, then, is that system kind of fleshed out, the 2-component system kind of fleshed out. Here is the histidine protein kinase in the membrane. The autoinducer binds in the periplasm, in the periplasmic domain of the transmembrane protein. And then in the cytoplasmic domain of the protein, we get phosphorylation. And a transcription, another response regulator is phosphorylated, so we get that response regulator is called LUX-U. It gets phosphorylated, which then there's a little cascade, phosphorylates another response regulator called LUX-O, and then LUX-O phosphorylated LUX-O is an activator for a sigma 54, particular kind of sigma factor promoter, and there is produced then an RNA is transcribed, which is an inhibitor of LUX-R. A lot more complicated. So this then, the inhibitor of LUX-R, so LUX, again, the LUX-R is the thing that is needed to activate the LUX operon. And because it's inhibited, we don't get light production. So that's the dim. That's the dim state. That's when we don't have the autoinducer bound. When we do have autoinducer bound, then this inhibition does not occur, and we get LUX-R active, and we get light production, we get protease production, or in other organisms, we can have the inhibition of virulence factors and inhibition of biofilm formation. So this system has a wider spectrum of activities that it controls. Now, this system, Vibrio harveyi, actually has two different quorum sensors. One's called AI2, and the other is called HAI1. And so now you see that both of those quorum sensors, the output is added together because they both yield the phosphorylation of LUX-U. So if you have either AI2 or HAI1, then you get phosphorylation.
Excuse me, questions. If these are autoinducers, then somehow, HAI1 and AI2 have to be produced, but I don't see where it is being produced.
No, it's not. So that part of the circuit. Well, let's see. Here we go. The autoinducer, so here is the LUX-CDABE. So there's the genes for the luciferase and for production of the aldehyde.
Yes, but how about the autoinducer molecules themselves? They have to be synthesized.
The autoinducer, so remember, that's the autoinducer is made with a fatty acyl group and a homoserine lactone condensed.
Right.
That's
okay.
Yeah, that's the autoinducer synthesis.
What about AI2 though?
Pardon me?
Is AI2 made the same?
Okay, so now, right. So now, AI2, so HAI1 is a homoserine lactone, the kind of thing we're used to. But AI2 is not a homoserine lactone. It's a dicyclic boron compound. It's actually the first real compound, biocompound containing boron, whose structure has been found. And really the remarkable thing is the structure of AI2 was discovered by crystallography of AI2 bound to its receptor. So that was the structure then of the autoinducer 2 was seen by the crystallography. Anyway, that's it's a different kind of compound, and it turns out that AI2 is not only produced by Vibrio hardii, but it is produced by many other kinds of bacteria. Probably at the moment some 40, 50 different bacteria are known which produce AI2. So that is behaving as a quorum sensor for the total number of bacterial cells in the neighborhood of Vibrio hardii. So it's interested in communicating not only with other members of its clone, but with other species, knowing what the density of other bacteria are in the neighborhood. Now, how it then, what the algorithm is for figuring out, probably it's competition for nutrient or something like that. I don't know. Okay, so that's a second kind of autoinducer and a more complex regulatory circuit. But by making the regulatory circuit more complex, it allows the system to integrate other signals. So, for example, this transcription at this sigma 54 promoter requires another ATP, so it's reading the cell's energy level as well. So this is this allows this more complex circuit using a sigma 54 promoter and a sigma 54 activator protein allows the cell more its metabolism and regulation more flexibility. Okay, this is so. This is what I've already talked about. This circuit with the two different autoinducers. Now, I want to move from discussions between different bacterial cells, same species or different species, to the question of how do bacteria talk to animal cells. And this is a different problem. And clearly, Vibrio fischeri talks to the cells of the squid. And there's been quite a bit of work that's been done by Margaret McFall Nye and Ned Ruby, who are now at the University of Wisconsin, on how the Vibrio fischeri talk to the host cells.
I'm sorry, why is that obvious that they do that?
Why is it obvious that they do that? It's probably not obvious yet, but the point is that when a squid is hatched, a little guy hatched, they have no Vibrio fischeri. They're born without Vibrio fischeri. Kind of like humans that could be born without biofilms in their gut if they were raised in an abiotic situation, which has been done with many vertebrate animals. Okay, so the point is that the squid have to get Vibrio fischeri from the seawater. Now, that's a big problem, because seawater contains many, many kinds of bacteria. And the squid, so Vibrio fischeri, even in places where there are many adults discharging their nightly load of Vibrio, the concentration of fischeri in the seawater is still probably less than 0.1% of the total number of bacteria. So the young squid has a problem of selecting Vibrio fischeri from this mixture of many kinds of bacteria. So not only does the baby squid not have fischeri, it also doesn't even have a complete light organ. All it's got are three pores on each side, tiny pores. Doesn't have the full-fledged light organ. So when the hatchling takes in water, so as it ventilates, flaps, water is pumped in and through here, and bacteria that are in the seawater then are come in contact with the surface of these cells. Now, at this point, the cells have lots of cilia all over them, and they're rather long. This is extending outward, and these cilia, their beating tends to move the water in toward these three pores, which are the rudimentary structures that will eventually become the light organs. They'll develop, actually, in the presence of bacteria. These cells also secrete a kind of mucus, and the mucus traps many bacteria. So that mucus then participates in the process which investigators call winnowing, in which they take a mixture, and this they have done this experiment by reconstruction. That is, they take these very young animals and provide them with a mixture of Vibrio fischeri and other gram-negative, but different species, not Vibrio fischeri, non-symbiotic bacteria, and also some gram-positive bacteria as controls. So all those kinds of bacteria can be presented to these animals, and then it's found that with the help of the mucus, essentially the motile cells get clumped in this sticky mucus. And then there is now some ununderstood processes which are being experimentally studied in which that mixture now, in which we've lost the non-motile gram-positive bacteria in this case, and other non-symbiotic bacteria, that mixture is further purified by interactions between, they're not yet understood, between this clump of bacteria and the cells on the surface of this nascent organ. So that already then the clumps that come in contact with the surface have a higher proportion of the motile Vibrio than other kinds of non-symbiotic bacteria. And by the time they have come inside the nascent light organ, they are essentially a pure culture of the motile Vibrio fischeri. So there've been a species-specific selection going on there. And then the Vibrio fischeri go up into these little peninsulas where they lose their flagella. And then they become essentially light-producing machines. So the nutrient for their growth, their differentiation, loss of flagella, and so forth, is being provided by the squid, and so that gives them a very, very high density culture.
Question.
Yeah.
Do you know if the squid would select for large knockouts? So if you put on a deep fishery with a Lux upper knockout, will it select it out or not?
I think not. No. It's looking mainly at the surface qualities of the bacteria. So it'll start selecting. It'll select gram negative bacteria over gram positive bacteria, for example. So it's looking at the lipopolysaccharide.
Because then it seems that there's an evolutionary advantage for at least some of the fischeri inside the organ to lose the Lux operon, because then they're not taxed at light production, but they can still absorb those same nutrients. Are there any fischeri without Lux operon observed?
You mean in nature?
Right.
You find, so I'm sure those mutations occur, but they don't survive. So apparently Lux-O is helpful, it's valuable, the light that Vibrio fischeri produces is valuable for it, you know. Apart from the fact that it, but actually you could say that that's because it's ultimately, it's going to become part of the light organ.
Of course, but you would think that there would be, you need some of the fischeri inside the organ to emit. But it would seem that evolutionarily there'd be a balance between those bacteria and the ones that lose Lux and kind of live off other light emitting bacteria.
So you're talking about a cheating situation. Yeah, cheaters. Yeah. So those the frequency of such cheaters are negligible. You know, they just aren't found. So apparently the selection is strong enough to the Lux-O mutants have not accumulated in C.
So then the selection will be continuing.
Yes, that's right. Because it's got to switch. Basically, it's got to be able to switch between the states. That's what it is.
There'll be dead squids, that's the problem.
Well, no, of course, but you would mention that, you know, statistically there'd be subpopulation of the cheaters, but apparently there's some active process going on.
Yeah, there's selection against the cheaters. And actually, I'll have some more to say about that in a different context when I talk about the mixed cell bacteria, because you have the same kind of situation.
Maybe there's a connection between the ability to adhere to the mucus and the ability to produce the light, and if you can't produce the light, you're not going to adhere to the mucus either. That's how the cheaters get kicked out. And this whole situation looks very much like sorting of animal, two different kinds of animal cells.
Yes, yes. In general, it's a sort of the same, and probably the same kind of molecular processes going on.
How do they get to lose their flagella? Is that also a form of gene control?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what the signal is that causes them to do that, but they eject their flagella in this region.
But if you put conditioned media in,
that hasn't been done.
Okay.
That is, so the experimentalists haven't quite got to that that stage left to know where what the program is basically for losing flagella.
So, other instances where they find non-vibrio fissure bacteria inside the squid?
No, I think not. I think, I mean, they're circulating through the, so water is circulating through and non-vibrio bacteria are in that water, but they don't end up in the light organs. They're this very strong selectivity. That's what's going on here, this purification process. The pretty remarkable bacteriological purification goes on.
Are you going to tell us what induces the developmental state? Because you said that they actually induce these light organs to actually develop from
That's not known. It's one quality is a lipid polysaccharide. You have to have the right lipid polysaccharide to there are several developmental things that happen. There's cell proliferation to make the light organ bigger. There's regression of these arms. There's loss of the cilia on those on the arms. All those things happen, and Ruby and McFall and I are trying to figure out what the individual steps are, but they don't know them yet. Thank you.